Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. I'm your host, Tommy Casamona. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate you being here. As always, please find us on Twitter at Yankees and Gravy. Please find us on Facebook, Yankee Gravy. At basically, Facebook, find, search Yankee Gravy. iTunes, best and most important one. Just search Yankees and Gravy on iTunes. Rate, comment, share, please, all that stuff. You guys know where to find us, Stitcher, all the platforms, this and that. Been away a little while, as you guys know. And let me just kind of touch on that, I guess. To be honest with you, it's just a bunch of things. I am busy. I am working a lot. And, you know, I had to put a little bit more focus and time on my job. That's one reason. Another reason is the Yankees have been depressing. So then not to, you know, feel if they're a hard, long, hard day, watching this crap they're putting on the field is a little disconcerting. And C, which I'll touch on also, is, you know, I don't necessarily know always how many people are out there, how many people are listening, how many pairs of ears this is getting to. And I always told you guys, the more you guys encourage me to let me know that you guys are out there, you are enjoying this, you are listening to this, it gives me the motivation, whether it's commenting, even if it's a solid 5 people consistently, which has been happening, and then it kind of goes away and this and that, and then you're like, you know, you're working your ass off all day, and you know, you love the Yanks, you're watching every game, you're enjoying it and this and that, and you know, you go to the gym, you wash up, you eat dinner, and you're like, you know, you're kind of tired. If you know that there's people listening and you know that there's people out there, that definitely gives you that motivation to flick on the microphone rather than crawl into bed. But, you know, that's why we're doing this too. I did get a couple of emails. I saw a couple of things on Facebook as well as Twitter about, you know, messages asking for another Yankees and Gravy. I'm not going to say my email box is flooded, but no, a few people did ask, and that is the exact thing that kind of encourages me to get back in the mix. We got a lot to cover today, so I don't want to necessarily talk about the ins and the outs and, you know, how often the podcasts are coming out, but let's get into it a little bit here. What do we want to start with? Just what a wacky year, and obviously we'll get into the whole yearly recap and stuff like that, but let's start it off with something that's current, actually, you know, semi-breaking, because it's today, and I don't think you got the whole story, and that is CC Sabathia. And this is going to be a polarizing topic, I could tell you right now, and you already know it, you've probably seen it, you know, this and that. I agree with everybody, you know, the guy is courageous, and the guy is stepping up, and he's handling something that, you know, he feels like he's failing his family, he feels like he's affecting his relationships, and it is time for CC, who I didn't know he had a drinking problem. I knew that incident he had in Toronto, but beyond that, I thought that was isolated. I didn't know that this guy had a drinking issue. I could explain some of the LBs if the beer is his booze of choice. But all kidding aside, it seems like he wants to do the right thing and he wants to get this stuff cleaned up. And yes, he put a bizarre Facebook post up today, and I think it was him. It said him, unless it was a hoax or somebody else, whatever. He made a long entry basically asking people to understand, forgive, respect the privacy, this and that, all well and good, makes sense, all that stuff. And then he posted a picture of a guy shoveling dog crap in his driveway with the meme saying something to the effect of, just give me a chance to get my shit together. So, CC not taking it too seriously, making, at least having the wherewithal to make a little bit of light of the situation by posting a picture of somebody shoveling shit in his driveway and, you know, basically relating that to his current struggles. Weird, bizarre, whatever, this and that. Here's the thing. I don't understand the timing, and I'm sorry. People are going to be pissed. People are going to say you're not understanding. People are going to say, who are you to, you know, this guy's doing the right thing. How are you? If he says today's the time you should do it, that's fine, and maybe it is. If it was that emergency, if he had this grand epiphany out of nowhere that he realized that today is the day, I got to check into rehab, you know, not far removed from a couple of days starting pitching, I got to take his word at that. But call me a cynic, call me a conspiracy theorist, you know, call me a pessimist. Something happened. Something had to happen because this makes no sense. Even if it was like out of nowhere, or even if it was just something that, you know, he's been thinking about for a while, how do you do it the day before the wild card? He not pitching. He wasn't pitching. He didn't have to have all this pressure on him. And, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I got to bring it home and I can't handle it and I'm not up to the task, so I got to pass the baton. He wasn't going to see action in that game. And for all intents and purposes, if you ask around the league, Yankees, at the very least, have just as good a chance to lose that game than to win that game. And if you're CeCe and you want to avoid a shitstorm and you want to avoid a bunch of people saying you abandoned your team, you know, if people are going to think that, all you have to do is wait one more day and you may be out of it anyway. Now, if you're not out of it and we win, then do it. Then make the announcement and go into rehab if you can't wait anymore. I get that, but what happened to where he couldn't wait that one extra day to see if the Yankees were out of it? Of course, not hoping the Yankees were out of it, but that would be, I guess, serendipitous, I guess would be the word, that, you know, in that regard, he could make that announcement. The Yankees would be out of it. Nobody would be blinking eyelash on timing or foul play or mysterious stuff. They'd be like, wow, oh, wow, CeCe's that bad off. We had no idea. All right, CeCe, good luck. You know, go get yourself some help, get cleaned up, and we'll see you next year. But why do it the day before the Yankees play a wild card elimination game? I get it again. I'm not saying it wasn't an emergency. I'm not saying it didn't have to happen basically immediately, but you just pitched an entire baseball season, 162 games. You were a starter for every fifth day basically when you were healthy. And the day before the wild card, you have to put this freaking out there and have it be a distraction like that? I don't get it, and that's my stance on it. But I swear, I wish him well. CeCe is one of my favorite all-time Yankee pitchers because, you know, despite his struggles recently, you know, he got us a ring, and he's been the guy for many, many years. So, I mean, who was the better pitcher? You had guys that came and go that were flashes in the pan, you know, say from 2007 or 2008 to what? To 2012, 13? Who was a better pitcher than CeCe Sabathia? Name one throughout those years, who was better consistently for that entire block of years. I don't think anybody. All right, that's CeCe. Let's talk about this team. And the year is over. I've been watching baseball a long time, guys, and I'm sure a lot of you have too. This definitely was one of the most mysterious and unexplainable Yankee baseball seasons. When John Sterling says, well, you know, how can you, Susan, how can you figure baseball? How can you, that's it. I'm going to just flat out apologize for that John Sterling impression, but let's get beyond that. How can you predict baseball? And no year exemplifies that more than this year. I mean, come on. Started out completely inconsistent. Win nine, lose nine. We didn't know. We could have the potential to be the team that wins nine in a row and unbeatable. We could be the awful basement dwelling, you know, team that loses nine in a row. Or what was mostly likely was that we would be somewhere in the middle. It's fascinating. You know, we all said, a lot of people said, and how can you disagree with it? You know, because you just look, you know, we all know baseball and we look at the team on paper, whether you're an expert, whether you're, you know, a jerk off in a bedroom with a microphone, whether you're anybody. You look at it and you see that this team looked like anywhere from an 82 on the low side, you know, maybe 80, could be an 80 win team that would, you know, a 500 team. Or if everything broke right, they could be an 87 to 90 win team. And, you know, they basically finished exactly where we thought they would, probably on the little higher side. And it's crazy how you talk about 162 games and I'm not taking credit because everybody probably would have said the same thing and everybody would have been right. You're basically predicting how many wins they're going to get within a couple. And that's what we all did, I think. You know, we were right. But tell you one thing, the route they took to get there was quite a wild ride and nothing like I think most of us thought it would be. I think if you really kind of take a step back, and obviously maybe not to the exact game, but I break the season up into thirds. You know, when you had your first third, you got nothing out of a lot of guys. Like, you brought some new people in. You know, it was a slow start. DD wasn't hitting at all. DZ wasn't fielding at all either. Steven Drew wasn't hitting, and he stayed not hitting except for some key big moments, which you have to give him credit for. Beltran was terrible. So you got second base, shortstop, and, you know, right field, not giving you anything. Lower half of the order. I mean, Headley was barely average and stayed that way the whole year and way below average in the field. Pitching was average, and we're talking about the first third of the year. Pitching was average as well. The bullpen was lights out, and our buddies, Tex and A-Rod, were in the mix, and they were kind of carrying us when we were hot. So you had a lot of inconsistency the first third of the year. You saw some flashes. There were some things to be excited about. And, you know, if you go back and listen to my podcast, I was like, you know what? Mainly because of A-Rod. You know, Tex too. I mean, Tex had the better year, and Tex was doing better, but A-Rod was more of the surprise. But those two guys right there, you didn't figure you were going to get that year out of them. The bullpen, you hoped and maybe kind of expected them to do what they did, but they at least matched, or if not beat any expectations they had. Starting pitching was what it was, and then some of the new guys that you were hoping, and some of the big new contract guys like, you know, Didi, Headley, and that, they were kind of disappointing, but they were giving us a fighting chance. Now let's go into the second third. Things seem to start happening, and this is where you thought we might be onto something, because for that period of time, the second third of the year, they were playing as well as anybody in the league. They were definitely making a serious run, and, you know, there was one point where they were 7 games ahead in first place. Amazing. You remember that happened in 1 week too, right? That happened in 1 friggin' week. Ugh, nuts. So, second third of the year, Didi was still bad. Defense was still, you know, you still had a lot of problems at shortstop, third base, and second base, which I always said was going to come back to haunt us. Actually, second base wasn't so bad. I take that back. But, you know, shortstop and third base, the whole left side of the infield. I mean, it was like, you know, I said it before, Mark Teixeira was like a goalie at first base. He never got a freaking normal ball thrown to him. It was a mess. A-Rod and Tex were still beasts, just continuing what they started in the first third. They were animals. They were carrying the team as well. The bullpen was top-notch. And then what happened on a positive note was that Ellsbury, Gardner, Beltran, McCann, and Didi all decided they were going to join the party too. This team was surprisingly well-balanced. You know, A-Rod and, you know, Tex got all the credit and everything like that, and rightly so for what, you know, they were the boppers, but these other guys were really kind of getting on base, table setting as far as Gardner and Beltran. McCann started to finally get comfortable in New York, and then Didi started showing you flashes of being able to play. But Ellsbury and Gardner, man, they were just doing their thing. They were doing their 1-2 thing, and it was awesome. So the bullpen stayed on lockdown, and we were scoring like animals. I think Toronto was the league leader in scoring, I think, most of the year. We led the league in 3-run home runs for most of the year, up until maybe the last 2 weeks of the season, where I don't know if the wheels fell off so bad because we became just anemic. But that second third, I would say in the American League, we were definitely playing probably better, and I'll say it, probably better than any team in the American League for that second third. Now the last third, here's where the issue started to happen. The wheels started to come off the whole time. You know, we're praising this team. You know, we're wondering, you know, this. you think it could be a good team if the team's going to hold up. But really, what's the likelihood of this team holding up? And you were pumped because going in past the All-Star break, you know, going into the trade deadline, we were holding up. We were doing well. We were playing well. We felt good about the team. And, you know, it looked like we were surprised. We were like, wow, it looks like, you know, Teixeira's still in the mix. A-Rod's still hitting home runs. And then everybody else that we had, you know. So then we started getting hit with the injury bug and, I guess, the lack of proverbial legs, as they would say. So you have injuries to half the rotation. You know, Evaldi's going down, and Evaldi's the guy that shit. That could have been one of the bigger ones. Like, he was. Well, you wouldn't call him an innings eater because he didn't last deep into games, but he was an innings eater as far as consistency. He would make all of his starts, and he got a lot of run support, and he was winning. He was the biggest winner on the team, one of the best winning percentage guys in the American League. Granted, he got all the run support, but he still wasn't blowing it. He was still hanging in there, and you could put him out every fifth day, get six innings out of him, and you could write that down. We lost that. Now, some teams are okay when they lose that because they have depth. We did not have necessarily the most depth that you'd want. So you got injuries to half the rotation, and the other half had mediocrity. Tanaka is our ace. We know that. He's not pitching like an ace, you know. He's pitching well. He's pitching good. He's being consistent. And, yes, he's the guy you want out there, but he's not a number one for a championship-caliber team. You know, he's not. He's pitching well. That's all you could say about him. And he's our default ace. So that is what it is. So Pineda, you know about him. If he don't have that slider, he doesn't even want to be out there. He does not, you know. This kid needs to learn how to be a battler. He needs to know how to fight through it. Tanaka, you have that. Tanaka gives up 3-4 runs. He's still going to have Tanaka grinding it out in the 5th, 6th inning. Pineda almost starts pitching like he wants out of the game. CeCe, the same thing with the grinder. You know, CeCe will grind it out for you. He was so inconsistent. But, you know, you knew that CeCe would pitch. And because of his ineffectiveness, we had the luxury. Girardi had the luxury of, you know, not necessarily having to worry about the arm, and he basically let him pitch. He kept him in there. CC ate a lot of innings too. Not effectively, but again, a lot like Evaldi. It just seems that Evaldi got the run support, and Evaldi did make the pitches when needed to be. But having said that, towards the end, CC started coming along. He had his best three outings in a row during a stretch a couple of weeks ago. The last one he had was a little bit of a clunker, but before that, he had three in a row, which he kind of dominated. He had his moments this year, CeCe. You know, he was rough, and the way he pitched, what do you want? That's a fifth starter. You're going to be five strong across the board. Who the hell is, you know? So he pitched like a fifth starter basically should, but the issue is people start going down, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's your number three, you know, and, you know, he's not a number three. He's certainly not a number two or a number one anymore, at least right now. But that's what happens. So that's what happened. Didi, Beltran held up. You know, they kept going straight through. Bird was great. You know what I mean? You had Bird come to the rescue. McCann really felt his stride. And, you know, obviously you had Severino. But the reality is for that last run, they just didn't have the legs. I have a little bit of a theory that I think, you know, and this doesn't say a lot for the character of this team. And again, you guys probably ad nauseum hear me talk about the teams that we all came up with, you know, the guys who are my age or a little younger, those 90s teams. And, you know, it's just so much about makeup. Oh, I wanted to say this too. I remember I didn't write it down, but I remembered it. You watch Bird, and then who was the other guy? I don't know. Bird, and it was somebody else. Some freaking he was young. Ref Snyder, yeah. Bird and Ref Snyder both got up, and one of them hit after the other. I think Ref Snyder was before him, and Bird hit after him, and these guys are fighting for a chance to stay on this team. They're hitting weak ground balls, and they're jogging to first base. I don't mean to be that old school coach, hustle your ass up, but I'm just talking about Derek Jeter, Paul O'Neill, guys like this, Bernie Williams, you run out the freaking ball. And that right there, to me, is going to show you the difference. As much as any, yes, this team isn't talented either way. I'm not talented. This team does not have championship talent on it either way, but you got to look at the guy's eye of the tiger. You got to see what their makeup is, and you got to examine what they are. Now, I'll tell you, like I said it before again, those guys on that team, the core five, and I'll throw Bernie in there with them, what you had, and throw in the other guys too, the Brociuses, because it was infectious, they had that look in the eye. You know, when I see Bird and Refsnyder especially, who are you? You're basically on the bubble. You're basically you're not an untouchable anymore. They basically, you know, Refsnyder's stock went down a ton this year just because he wouldn't be able to field. The guy can hit like a ton, but when you hit a ground ball, are you jaded already? Even Bird, are you jaded already that you don't have to run out of ground ball when Derek Jeter, up until deep into his late 30s, he's sprinting out every ball? Derek Jeter, the iconic superstar, is not too good to run out his ground balls and his fly pop-ups. And you guys in the league for half an hour, you guys can't. That offended the living shit out of me. Fast forward to the end of the game, and between that doubleheader, there was a party in that dugout. There was a party in the freaking dugout. They're giving away games. The home field advantage is slipping, you know, through their fingers. If they didn't get lucky and have Houston lose, and they're very, very nonchalant in that dugout. It's just such a contrast from what you used to see from these guys who just were out there for blood. Not even the most talented guys. I said it before, more than baseball players and anything. I just was so proud of that team because they were good guys more than anything. You're talking about quality individuals on the field. Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit, Derek Jeter, Bernie Williams, just, you know, humble dudes that would walk out there and just be out there for each other and, I mean, screw anything that got in the way from them winning. And, you know, this goes down to, you know, the leadership thing that I'll touch on a little bit more. You know, I said it before, it's like since Donnie Baseball came into the league in 1985, you're talking about, you know, 30 years now. You're talking about 30 years. And for 30 years, you knew exactly who the leader was, and you knew who the boss was in that locker room, and you knew who you were going to answer to if you did do bullshit as a 21-year-old, like not hustle to first base. That doesn't exist right now, and that's the biggest issue that nobody talked about in the beginning of the year. You know, I don't see you have to have a captain, and I guess, you know, I don't know if there is really an answer. I think that's something you have to start doing if you want to keep it homegrown. That's something you want to start doing, you know, 5 years before you know your main guy is going to leave. You want to start setting it up to where somebody's responsible for the culture in that dugout, in that locker room, on the field. And I feel like it's maybe a topic that we ignored. Everybody kept downplaying it. Cashman, I don't know if you're hearing, picking up the sounds of Astoria, but, you know, it's garbage trucks driving through the streets of, you know, Astoria, Queens, so I apologize for that. Oh, no, look, here's a plane now. Great. Yeah, sure. Take your time, fly over, fly around, do a lap, whatever. But, yeah, you know, that just, I got to believe that guys like Jeter, guys like O'Neill, guys like Donnie Baseball just would pull those guys aside and respectfully say, hey, what are you doing? With all the respect, young man, who the hell do you think you are? You run your ass to first base. If I can do it, you can do it. I don't know, man. I don't mean to sound like the fuddy-duddy, but that just bothers the hell out of me. And that speaks to the thing that I've been saying in the beginning of the year and throughout the year, which is the leadership issue. And like I said to you guys, you know, the leader on that team, basically, and I wasn't saying it to praise him as much as I was saying that it was going to happen by default, no matter who likes it and no matter who says anything. A-Rod has been the leader of that team, you know? Nobody would have said that in the beginning of the year. I brought it up when he showed up, and I knew it was kind of going to happen. Things were just going to fall into place, and that would just happen naturally. And I would have believed that if you told me he'd have 15 home runs by now, 12 home runs. I still think A-Rod would have been in the locker room as the elder statesman and still be the guy that people go to ask where this is, what do I do about this. And A-Rod would have sat there in his chair comfortably and held court and just been the leader of this team either way. Now he freaking gets, so he's going to, you know, 33 home runs. Definitely leading this team. They're going to him, whether Brian Cashman or anybody in the media likes it or not. And how fast did that quiet down? This guy went from, I'm not saying he's being praised like Jeter now, but boy, did, you know, he was the devil. He was public enemy number one, and all you got to do is hit a couple of home runs, and man, you know, stories just fizzle away. He's one of the guys now. A-Rod's back. What do I think? What do I think could have been done differently? Not a whole lot. And what's the point of doing coulda, shoulda, woulda stuff? And who the hell am I to sit here and say they should have done this or they should have done that? But one thing that I point to, especially with Teixeira, Teixeira hurt that, you know, shin. And it was like, you know, Teixeira came in with that reputation. And I was guilty of it too, maybe, of saying, I mean, is this guy, you know, you're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop with that Tex injury that you know is going to happen. And, it went so long without it happening, and you're like, man, is the stars going to align this year? A-Rod's healthy. No, the problem is it just took a little longer. Now, the weird thing to me, and I'll never get, is that so he gets hit. He hits it off his own shin. They give him the MRI, comes up negative, and now they're just basically bullying him to play, you know? And you could tell by what Tarek Teixeira was saying, you know, I know, everybody wants me out there. Everybody's working real hard to get me back on the field. And if you listen to the undertone, you could tell that he wasn't ready, but they were trying to make him be ready. And they eventually did. And they put him back on the field for a couple of games, and he couldn't play after that. So he's like, I'm sorry, I can't play. He tried. He actually went out there. He had a few at-bats, played a little bit, and it didn't work out. And they sat him again. And now he's just not getting better, not getting better, not getting better. They decide to do another test, and now there's a fracture. So they probably botched that. They probably re-injured his leg when they put him out there and let him play for those couple of games. How the hell are you the New York Yankees with the most resources in all of sports and the best doctors and – you know, the best decision makers, ideally based on what the salary you have to pay. How does it take you over a month to find out your superstar player, your MVP caliber candidate player, basically has a broken leg? So that was a mess, and that was a bad job overall. I think we also, you know, Stephen Drew was a polarizing figure too. The guy was, it was a celebration when he finally hit over 200. Did hold it down pretty well in the field, but honestly, we accepted that mediocrity all year, and it wasn't mediocrity, it was piss poor. You can't freaking hit 196 for three quarters of the freaking year and keep your job. I'm sorry, you just can't do it. You should have done something. You should have, you know, I would have been happier letting Ref Snyder take his lumps. Now, they may have done that, you know, now that I think of it, they may have done that if Headley and, you know, if Headley and Didi and Tex were all playing lights out defense in the infield, and that would have been their one weakness. But maybe their thinking was is that if Headley is crapshoot, Gregorius off to a slow start defensively and offensively, Teixeira just trying to roll around and save whatever he can from these wacky throws that are coming all over the place, plus he's old. Maybe you don't want to add another hole defensively to second base. But I don't know. I also don't think that you could just sit there and accept 190. Put anybody else in there. Put anybody else in there. Convert freaking, I don't know. Bring the guy Mateo up from single, anything. But how many freaking championship teams have a guy in the lineup every single day hitting 196? Not too many. I would have, to me, Ref Snyder would have been the move. I would have taken the shot, and I would have liked to have seen what Bird and Ref Snyder could do playing together. Eventually, you know, they didn't bring up Judge. You know, that might have been a non-move that, you know, garnered some attention. And you know what that's all about, you know. Like I said, you know, Cashman runs his mouth saying, I don't think he's good enough for it. This and that. Cashman's a, you know, a Napoleon midget who likes to get back at these star athletes that probably used to beat him up and put him in lockers when he was a kid. But, you know, So I think they should have probably used Ref Snyder. I would have done that. And you know what? You probably would have lost a couple of games because of it. But I kind of got to believe that maybe he'd make up for those losses with the bat. So it would have been a wash. You know, probably would have won some games with his bat, I should say. Would have been a wash. And we would have gotten a look at the youth movement in full swing. And, you know, giving this guy some obviously much needed experience. playing the position that the Yankees are hoping he could play for the next 10 or 15 years. You know, so, I mean, it couldn't, I would say if you had somebody, if, you know, even if Drew was hitting 260, you know, 250 and playing lights out defense, and even though, you know, he's not long for the position and long for the team, you know, still give him a shot. Let him play out there if he's at least being productive and getting on base, you know, walking. But, you know, Drew was just, that was a tough season for him. And he seems like a good guy, too. You don't want to knock him. And, yes, he certainly did win us some games with the dramatic late-game home runs and doubles that he was hit. The guy did. You have to give him that. He had a flair, you know, for the few hits he got. He had a flair for when to get him. What else? Ellsbury and Gardner, man. You know, these guys were guys who you loved having when they were, you know, first third of the year, maybe a little bit into the second third. They were like a, you know, lightning and more lightning, you know, and a little thunder too, because, you know, when Ellsbury gets up and he swings in that level swing and he hits those screaming line drives, he's not the biggest home run guy, but he can really bang those line drives sometimes. And it's a thing of beauty to watch him hit sometimes. The guy's ridiculously talented. Gardner, similar, not maybe as polished of a baseball player as Ellsbury is, but what I would say, you know, they are similar players, and I would say if you put Gardner's heart in Ellsbury's body, you'd have a star. You'd basically have a star. Basically what you would have is Ellsbury on his contract here, you know, and that's what I do. I do question Ellsbury as far as, you know, a little bit of the, you know, play through pain stuff, the emotional side of it. Ellsbury is an over-the-top talented guy, but I don't necessarily feel the fire. Gardner, the fire is freaking there. But he just, you know, seems to just be so streaky. And then, yeah, he throws his body around so much and plays with such reckless abandon that, yes, the guy is spent in freaking September. So those guys were just a wacky thing all year. You know, that was funny. They were stealing. And then the thing where they were stealing bases in the beginning, and then they just started getting caught all the time. I guess maybe they were getting tired. But, you know, I think Joe Girardi put the kibosh on them, you know, having the green light and being able to steal whatever they want. You know, ultimately, you know, another big thing about it was Eovaldi, Pineda. The whole thing was Eovaldi, Pineda, Ellsbury, and Tex going down that hurt us. None of that surprising, though, you know? It's just like you said, you just started feeling good for two reasons. You started feeling good because A-Rod and Tex were doing way more than you ever thought they could have dreamed of doing. And B, the injury bug wasn't hitting us way, way deep. And maybe it would have been better for us if we would have got hurt maybe halfway through the year. Then we would have had the time to recover, get the guys rested. But they stayed healthy, and they played through the whole year. And then they started breaking down, you know, with a month or so left. And that's what sucks. So like I said, Pineda gets hurt. Ellsbury gets hurt. Tex, lately, gets hurt. The only surprise was Eovaldi. And who's to say Eovaldi, you know, the guy's raring back and throwing 101 miles an hour on a regular basis. That just freaks me out in and of itself. And that's just, to me, you know, it is what it is. But those guys who throw like that, it's a ticking time bomb. You realize how violent that is to be able to throw 101 miles an hour? Picture stepping under gas in your car and flooring it until you get to 101. And this guy is able to match that speed in a 60-foot distance. Nuts. And then the other issues you had was the mix of CC, Adam Warren, Nova. These guys, you know, they're barely keeping us going as fourth or fifth starter levels. Then when our guys start going down, you're asking them to do more. You know, even Roberts. You're asking Wilson, I'm sorry. You're asking these guys to do much more. And these guys are becoming – they're going from, like, battling for the fourth and fifth starting position, Capuano, which – I mean, that's a joke. To really as guys start going down, Tanaka went down a good amount of the year. Not a good amount of the year. We talked about that too. I think everybody expected him to have to go in for Tommy John again. And who's to say he won't blow it out tomorrow? But, you know, well, today it should be now because this is coming out late night as it usually does between days. You know, and as these guys have to go in and replace guys like Pineda and guys like Tanaka, and the, you know, they're not meant to be up there. You know, CC's not a set number two or number three starter anymore right now, at least not this year. He's not, you know, he showed flashes, and maybe he can get some more rest, get that knee fixed, get off the freaking booze, and, you know, maybe get that weight down a little bit and find a little, come back with a little bit more knowledge and data on what you learned this year as you journey into the life of a, I don't want to say junk ball pitcher, but, you know, a power pitcher, but a power pitcher, not a power thrower, which was what he was. And these guys, you know, you just don't ask too much of these guys. How about Nova? They say that the first year after Tommy John, because if you saw Nova this year, you're just not impressed. You know, the first game, he was lights out. You couldn't hit him. I mean, that was probably a lot of adrenaline. And then he just got kind of like progressively worse since then. And people say that. People say the first year after the Tommy John is an adjustment year, and then you get your strength back, and next year he should be good. I'm hoping. I saw a lot in Nova in the beginning, and I liked him a lot, and I thought he could be, you know, a strong, strong three or a low-end number two, solid guy in the rotation. But he's not proving that right now. That's it on that. What else do we have here? How about Severino, man? Severino was a blessing. You know, Severino, having Severino, I still agree, not still, I now agree with not trading him. I wanted to trade him. I was like, you know what, I want to get Mark Price, and I want to keep Mark Price away from Toronto, and I want to keep this lead, and I want to build on it, and I want to put a foot on their throat. That's what I want to do. But to be honest with you, watching this guy pitch, and speaking to what I just did speak about regarding the 101-mile-an-hour guys, this, you know, this is not to say that Severino is not throwing hard and it's not a violent motion no matter what you do, but he just looks smooth. He just looks smooth. He doesn't have to throw 99. He's dialed it up to 98, and that he didn't profile as that when he came up. People said he topped off at around 96, and in the beginning he was kind of topping off at 96. And I don't know if he got stronger. I don't know if he Rothschild worked with him and found an extra couple of miles per hour. But excuse me again, trucks passing. I saw him go up to 98, as you guys did as well. And the truth is that this guy is a beast. And even if you would have, you know, gotten Price, Price wouldn't have guaranteed you a World Series. You probably would have had to give away Severino or maybe another one of these guys. No, you know what? We probably wouldn't have won the World Series anyway. We would have made a much better run at it. But now, you know what? We got this kid. He's going to be a golden arm for a long time. We got the other untouchables. You know, and if we can get somebody a little leadership going, put a little fire in their ass, we may have something here, guys. You know, correct not to trade this guy. I was wrong. He's going to be a strong, high number two. Low end, you know, he could be an ace. I don't know. I don't necessarily see him overpowering and over-dominant like a championship-caliber ace would be. But, you know, I'm not ruling that out yet either. That's that. Joe Girardi, our buddy Joe, he was Girardi. Girardi was Girardi. Same thing. Same. You know, it's so funny. In late August, early September, Joe begins to age right before our very eyes. He starts to look like he would rather be anywhere in the world. He'd rather be in Alaska, naked with nobody and no food. I don't know. That's just what I came up with, guys. Sorry. Then to be managing this team. And you could tell by, you know, jeez, hold on. Could tell by the way he manages sometimes and comes out and argues. You know he wants to get kicked out of some of these games. And it's not even maybe – it is during the game because when the relief pitchers come in and he's moving them and shaking them and, you know, like I said, I think, you know, if I'm going to nitpick on Joe, I think he tinkers with things too much, whether it's the lineup all the time, righty-lefty matchups, obsessed with that stuff. He makes these pitch. He does the same thing on the pitching version of that, goes to the book too much. And, you know, and when he goes to the book, goes by the book, and he brings somebody in because this is his master plan and this is what his binder says to do, and it doesn't work, man, you can feel how pissed off he looks in that dugout. And then, yeah, now he's got to sit down and answer a bunch of dumb questions. Joe, talk about the move you made. Talk about the move. I don't want to talk about the move I made. I don't want to explain. Leave me alone, okay? We're playing tomorrow again. So I just see him, and I kind of sympathize with him, you know, obviously not the moves he makes, but, you know, when he has to sit there in front of a bunch of people who, you know, 99% of which couldn't approach the level at what they do to the level that what he does. So I think Joe is a good manager. I think the team likes him. I think the team respects him. And I think he's one of the better managers in the game. If I'm going to nitpick, I'm going to, you know, air my complaints or my second guesses. But overall, I like our manager, and I'm happy he's there. What I say in the beginning of the year about the team, I was optimistic that this team would compete for a wild card if we stayed healthy. And like I said before, we did, and that was like a little bit of, you look at it a little bit like a tease, because they did stay healthy for way longer than you thought. You thought you'd just be battling injuries all year. Everybody stayed healthy all year, and then some serious, serious main cogs broke down together at the end of the year, which killed us. And I spoke already about the, and I wrote it down twice, I guess, but spoke already about the lack of leadership. You know, first time in 30 years, we have no true leader. Don't underestimate how important that is. And again, to pat myself on the back, which I rarely get the chance to do, I did tell you guys that A-Rod would be if not the leader of this team, and that's exactly what he is. All right. Where are we at now? Let's talk about what we're left with. We are here, and it is 10-6, and later on today, the Yankees will play a one-game wild card playoff game. I agree with the policy of changing it back to where it is a one-game playoff. It's way better to have more of an emphasis on winning the division. I think it's much more important. And, you know, it was getting weird where people just would just start resting people because it didn't make any bit of difference if they didn't care about winning the division. And that's no fun. I also don't like the way it used to be back when I first started watching, where, you know, it was four divisions and four people went. It was four divisions, and you basically, how did it work? Whatever it was, you had the no wild card, and only the division leaders made the playoffs. I'm drawing a blank. How was the playoff structure? I know you're home sitting. You know what it is. I'm dumb right now. I'm drawing a blank. It's late. I didn't get much sleep. I think it's better that, you know, because under that regard, people are giving up and throwing in the towel, and it's completely over. You get like the 86 Mets run away with the league that year. There was no wild card. Whitey Herzog said a third through the year back then, the division's over. The Mets have it. He's freaking managing the Cardinals in the same division. They were in the same division back then. There was four, East and West in both, but I thought there was two rounds to the playoffs, right? Or no? Was it just the pennant and the World Series back when I was watching it? I thought there was two rounds. I don't know. I don't know why I can't figure that out right now. All right. So I do agree with the fact that there's a one-game wild card and not a series based on the fact that these guys don't do results. So here's what I look at. This is the way I do look at it. I don't think these wild cards are playoffs. I don't think you count them as making the playoffs. I think you just give it a completely separate name, and it's wild card. It's not. You know, baseball is a marathon. Its very structure speaks to the series. You know what I mean? It speaks to playing a few games in a row. Just the way the teams are set up, that there's multiple different starting pitching, there's righty-lefty matchups, there's different, you know, you go into different cities. So it's like, you don't get a fair. It's not fair. It's not fair to have teams play in a one-game playoff. Going back to what I said, I agree with it. I like it because I don't think it should be fair. You know, to me, the Yankees did not make the playoffs. And, you know, what this is, and I agree with giving it to them, it's just a bone that they're being thrown. And by name, it says it all. Well, you're a wild card. You're not a playoff team. You're a wild card team. You didn't technically make the playoffs, but we'll give you the chance by winning this one game to get in there. And then if you do win the game, we're going to throw you right into the fire, and you're going to play the hardest team. And that's what happened. That's what should happen. You know what I mean? So I'm happy they made it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I don't want the wild card, but you know, I'm not putting too much into this game tomorrow. I'm going to watch it, and it's going to be stressful. But at the same time, I'm already looking at it like it's a loss because I feel like, all right, so we lost, and this is a chance for us to maybe get back in, despite the fact that we probably don't deserve it. So I will be watching it. This is the interesting part to me. The fact that the Yankees are limping into the wild card game, this means their fate can travel either way. They can win this game and not be the better team, and they could lose this game and be the better team. And that's what I mean about a one-game playoff. It will not be known who the better team is after this game is over. Here's why our situation right now is better. It's better that we do have a wild card. Because what would happen right now if we were if we made the playoffs and we were going in and we were going to we were going to go play and we were going to play the Royals right now in a best of five game series. I got a feeling that the way we've been playing, the way we've been pitching, the way we've been hitting, and the, just the overall vibe on the team, you know, we're not going to win that series. So the fact that we don't have to go in and play the Royals right now helps us. What happens instead? We have a who cares, lay it all on the line, one-game playoff. Now, if we lose that game, to me, no harm, no foul, because we weren't going to beat the Royals anyway the way we were playing. If we win this game, that's a fire. That's, you know, Major League Baseball says that's a playoff game, and we won a playoff game, and now we're going to play the Royals with a whole new swagger. And, you know, so to me, the wild card game is just inevitably helpful for the Yankees. And if we won the division, and if we just, you know, say there was no Toronto, and, you know, they didn't make the moves they made, and we played the same way, but by default, because we had such a good second, third of the year, we limped into the division title. We wouldn't do so well. We would get our asses kicked just because of the way we're playing, the confidence level, the dragging our feet, the coldness of the bats, just the lack of confidence all around, we lose. But now that we didn't win the division and we're forced to be in this wild card, we actually do have a chance to pump ourselves up with a win in this game. So the wild card game is that spark. If they lose, like I said, they probably would have lost anyway. If they win, all bets are off. And then, you know what? You got me back in. If they beat the Astros tomorrow night, you know, I think the Royals are the better team. I really do. But now you're in the playoffs. Anything can happen. And they got to beat you several times in a series rather than one time. And anything can happen. So I'll be back in. So that's it. All we have is hope, and that's what it is. And what day is today? It's Tuesday, and who's pitching? Tanaka. So we got Tanaka Tuesday. We got our race going. We got our own ballpark, and we have a hope. So I guess that's it, ladies and gentlemen. Here's to hoping. Enjoy the game tomorrow. I'm really, really going to try to be with you as much as possible for as deep as we go into these playoffs, and I'm hoping for the best. Like I said, and I'm going to apologize for probably the last 10 minutes of this podcast. It is getting late. I am getting tired, but I am excited about tomorrow. And I am excited about the few of you that definitely did reach out and ask for more episodes. And any of you out there who are listening, you know, please, please, please do the rating thing. Find me on iTunes. When I see it on iTunes, I see some reviews on iTunes and it's all positive, but then I see not enough ratings to actually post you as being a rating getter. So if you guys do me that favor, iTunes most specifically, and that'll give me some legs and that'll give me some, who knows, maybe we'll turn this into Knicks and Gravy. Maybe we'll just keep it general. Maybe we'll do some football. We'll do variety. As long as there's people out there checking us out, I'm down to do this. So again, my name is Tommy Casabona. Great year. I mean, a great year, but a fun year to watch, and probably a better than expected year, slightly on the high side. Thank you again, guys. Appreciate it. Twitter at Yankees and Gravy. Facebook, Yankee Gravy. Yankees and Gravy on iTunes. I need you to subscribe. I need you to rate. I need you to comment. And we'll keep this thing going. Thanks again, guys. Enjoy the game.